Welcome to episode 2 of the Ikivi podcast. Today we have with us Sarah, founder of Copper and Clothes, a hub and resource for us to learn and get excited about cooking beautiful, nourishing food using local, sustainable ingredients. Sarah speaks with us about mindful eating and how food can become a meaningful anchor through our day, and leads us into a demonstration of what this can look like by having us do the mindful raisin exercise. We discuss ways in which we can address how difficult eating healthy can be sometimes, the food cravings we experience, and she guides us into engaging with them carefully in ways that can transform our relationship with ourselves and with food.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Nivi. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Thanks for that really lovely intro about Copper and Clothes.
Thank you so much for joining us. And
not at all.
We're so excited to listen to, you know, the depth of mindful eating and how it's kind of changed a lot for you. But we'll get into that slowly.
So it's an honor to be asked on. So thank you so much. I really love this series of kind of conscious dialogues and your platform about conscious living. So thank you so much.
Thank you. So my first question to you is kind of an introduction into the conversation. So what is mindful eating and why should we be mindful while we eat?
Yes. No, it's a really good question. So mindful eating, just I guess to give the context for anyone who's not familiar, mindful eating is really just mindfulness as applied to eating. So if anybody knows anything about mindfulness, or for anyone that doesn't, we're talking about present moment awareness and acceptance of what is, and being in the moment, so being in the present. So why is that so important when we're eating? There's so many reasons. One is that in order to be more mindful throughout our day, so have more present moment awareness, which has a whole host of benefits, including reducing our tendency to feel maybe a little anxious or stressed out. Like, the points at which we eat can be huge anchors, can be very helpful anchors for staying in the present moment and connecting with our food. And particularly at this time, I think the small pleasures of life are more important than ever, while we're kind of, however you choose to perceive it, but stuck at home, maybe not being able to do other things which make us happy. Food and taste and pleasure is actually a really important moment in the day. So being there rather than being elsewhere in our mind is one really important. I mean, that's kind of the reason in itself to eat mindfully. But I think where there are other benefits where people experience difficulties with food, for example, certain things like digestive issues are often caused by eating way too fast. Eating mindfully can help us to eat more slowly. Where we tend to maybe overeat, so we eat a little bit too much because we eat very fast. Again, mindful eating is about slowing down and eating consciously and being aware of when we start to feel full and not kind of getting to that point. Another really important thing is what when we talk about mindfulness, and so I think somebody's really helpfully put a, you know, mindful living, saying like people are often just, you know, rushing around, barely paying attention to what's going on, always imagining that they'll be happier or that things will be better in in another, like in the future. So mm-hmm. being mindful in the moment when you're eating is also accepting what's actually happening in the yeah. moment. So it might be that you are eating and feeling stressed about other things, and you can note that and be aware of that, whilst also keep coming back to it in the same way that with mindful awareness in a kind of a more structured meditation practice, you might keep coming back to the breath, coming mm-hmm. back to your food and tasting it and chewing it and the actual experience of eating it. It can help you keep coming back to the present moment. So it can be like an anchor in the present moment. Mm. So it can both help you to be more mindful as well as being an expression of mindfulness, if that makes
yeah.
sense. So you don't have to sit there going, oh God, you know, why am I not being mindful? Why am I not eating slowly? You can just notice what's happening. I've zoned out for a second. Oh, I yeah. feel like scrolling on my phone. Why is that? Come back to eating. So it can be a practice in itself to help us to be more mindful.
Yeah. And I think, like you were saying a little earlier, that this whole situation has kind of changed us a little bit.
Yes.
I think prior to all of this, we were rushing and doing things.
Yes.
And I think that does seep into every aspect of our lives.
Yes.
But we were so on the go all the time that...
Yeah.
I mean, eating dinner in front of a television was normal, right? Like you do those things or you're listening to something or you're talking to somebody else while you're eating. But I think now we've seen a lot more people kind of moving into actually enjoying the simple pleasures because there is not much stimulation.
Yeah, because we can't go to a fancy restaurant or to the theater, you know, or for a fancy night out. So we have to find the simple pleasures. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. Really interesting. All right. So the next part of this conversation is actually kind of taking us into the different aspects in more detail of mindful eating. Like what kind of encompasses the whole idea of mindful eating? And I think you'd want to do an experiment with us, with everyone joining in.
I did.
Go ahead, tell us about it.
I feel that sometimes things are better demonstrated first rather than me trying to get wordy and explain things.
Yeah.
So this is the mindful raisin eating conversation. So anybody who's joined...
I've never done it before, so I'm nervous.
Exactly. And to lots of people, it will be new. Apologies if you've seen me talk about this before, but I do it all the time. And only good things come from doing the mindful raisin exercise. So I have a raisin here. I hope you have one too, Nivi. Very good. Okay, so this is just... I'm going to basically talk you through. So just listen to what I'm saying and do what I'm saying. So firstly, we have this raisin in our hands. So just hold it up in front of you and really look at it. Maybe for the first time in your life, like really, really look at this single raisin in your hand. And first thing we're going to do is really, really think about what it is. So what is a raisin?
Are you asking me or are you going to?
I am literally asking you because people actually don't know more often than you'd expect.
Well,
it's a grape. Yeah.
It's a grape. It's a dehydrated grape.
Yes, correct. It's a dried grape. Okay. So it's a dried grape for anyone who didn't know. So the first thing we can do is look at the raisin, look at what type of grape it must have been. Imagine it. So once we know what type of grape it is, we can imagine its whole journey. So grapes grow from on a vine. So imagine it was once a seedling and it grew into a vine. If anyone knows what a vine looks like, they kind of grow up and then they're arranged to grow along. And then grapes grow in bunches. So it was one grape on a bunch of maybe, I don't actually know how many grapes are in a bunch, but somewhere between kind of 30 and 70, so it was one grape of those and of that bunch, and it was hanging on a vine. And you imagine all the things that went into that whole vine being able to flourish and all those bunches of grapes being able to grow. So you're thinking about what conditions was it growing in, the soil, the nutrients, the weather. Then we can start to think a little bit about the journey that it's been on to come to us. So it must have been grown on a farm for it to be raisin, which ended up in our food cupboard. So the farmers, workers on the farm that were involved in that grape growing, nurturing of the plant, and then subsequently harvesting that grape bunch. And the people that would have been involved and the processes that would have been involved in sun drying it. I know mine is like an organic grape, so no chemicals were used to dehydrate it, but we can imagine. So let's just imagine, because it's nicer imagery, that it was drying in the sun. And all the people that would have then been involved in packaging it and delivering it to us, it would have been packaged, it would have been delivered to a shop. So it's been on a journey, this grape. This one little grape to get into our food cupboard. And we can just, before we actually get to enjoy this grape, we can just spend just a moment to really feel the sense of gratitude and almost be humbled by the enormity of the journey of this little grape. Like all of those people that would have been involved in growing it, that goes into nurturing a vine, as well as all the people and factory workers and delivery people and shopkeepers that would have been involved in enabling us to buy it. Mm-hmm. And we can also feel grateful that we have a grape, because actually they are delicacies in many, many parts of the world, and they're not that cheap, because that is actually the journey they've been on. So that is the journey of this grape. So you see, I've already been going on for 3 minutes, and we're just talking about where it's been, and we haven't even thought about eating it. But that is the first part of mindful eating. It's connecting with our food. What is it, and what journey has it been on? Then we can start to now really think about the grape itself. So the first thing I want you to do is just like, it's kind of like feeling it in between your hands. Yeah. It's so like, it has a nice texture, and it's kind of squidgy and pleasing to the touch.
It has a nice feel to it,
And then we can just feel the texture of it. So is it kind of, I mean, they tend to be quite wrinkly. They tend to be like squidgy. Mine's quite long and thin. We both have light-coloured grapes. Some people at home might have a dark-coloured grape if they're kind of following along. And before we actually eat it, just really start to anticipate what is it going to taste like? What is it going to feel like in your mouth? So have that anticipation. And then finally, you can put it in your mouth. So I'm not going to put mine in my mouth because I won't be able to speak, but just put it into your mouth, but don't bite it. So now just actually roll it around and feel the same textures that you were just feeling with your hands, with your tongue. And now finally you can bite it. Don't swallow it yet. Just start to chew it and notice the flavors which are being released into your mouth, the textures. Try and notice whether there's any flavor in this raisin that you've never tasted before. And keep chewing until it's completely gone. Like, don't swallow it until it basically doesn't exist as a whole thing anymore. And it's become, it's been mixed in with your saliva, and you've really, really ground it up with your teeth. And you'll notice that the flavors might change over the course of the chewing process. And just before you swallow, just take one moment to think about where it's going. Like, where are you sending it by swallowing it? What is the journey that food goes on through the body? So I know you can't speak. But it's going down your esophagus, like into your stomach first, and then it will go into your small intestine and then your large intestine. So it is just kind of sending it on its way. So Are you done?
Yeah, I'm done.
Yes.
I have like.
Yeah, exactly. Do you have any kind of reflections on the flavors and whether there were kind of?
Firstly, I don't think I've ever personally ever done this before. I've never spent that much time focusing on a single grape. Firstly, I think it's enormous to think of, you know, the supply chain and how that this particular grape has even reached me. And I mean, it's just one single grape. It's one single raisin. Yeah. But the amount that we eat on a daily basis, I can't even imagine. It's overwhelming almost.
Exactly. Well, I mean, what people have said is like normally they would kind of eat handfuls of grapes at a time.
Yeah.
Rather than one. And it took us 6 minutes. And that is actually, I mean, the mindful raisin exercise, I didn't make it up. It's kind of, it is a genuine exercise that people, that's been like developed to help teach people mindful eating. And the real live script is like something like 10, 15 minutes long. Like there's a script for it. So this is like an abridged version. So all of those things that we just imagined about the raisin, like we could have gone into even more detail on all the full of its journey. And that kind of brings us nicely. So that example of the raisin brings us nicely to the first component of mindful eating, which is connecting with your food and connecting with your food, like while you eat it, but also before you eat it. So when you really connect with your food, you start to think about the journey that it's been on and how it's grown. You also, so it forces you, just like with Ikivi and the platform that you have in terms of conscious fashion. So conscious fashion is all about thinking about where your clothes or any fashion item that you want is, how it's made, the journey that it's been on, right back to the raw materials and the fabrics and the whole journey right up to the packaging. So it's the same. It is exactly the same with food.
Yeah.
What is the journey that it's been on right up from when it was a seed? And also we're thinking about raw materials. We're thinking about packaging. We're also thinking about the ethics of the supply chain and who was involved in that. So the environment, the people. So when we connect with our food in a mindful, conscious way, what I find is rather than, I mean, it's a very, you organically start to want to make better food choices.
Yeah.
From a conscious, being conscious about the environment way.
Right.
And conscious about people and packaging way. It just, it naturally comes.
Yeah.
Until you can't notice it anymore.
So there are basically three aspects of it, right? The first is thinking of where the product is coming from.
Yes.
The second is actually sitting down and tasting and eating your food. But the third aspect is what the effect is of that, right? Like, can you speak a little bit to that a little bit more?
Yeah. So as well as you said, connecting while you're eating, it's also about thinking, the third key, the way I think about it in my mind in these three buckets is kind of, the third one is thinking about food's impact on you and your body. And so things like eating slowly also makes us afterwards feel a lot more comfortable. We feel good after we've eaten. It's also noticing how different foods make you feel. So again, it's not about judging. Mindfulness is never about creating impossible standards for yourself and saying mindful eating is about eating foods which make you feel good. It's subtly different than that. It's about noticing how different foods make you feel. So if you feel good afterwards, that's, you notice that and you allow it to be. If foods don't make you feel good afterwards, that doesn't mean it's not, I mean, that's not against mindful eating, but the point is the more you notice that and actually notice it, the more you the more it then goes full circle and loops back to the decisions you make in the first place.
Yeah.
So because what happens, I think sometimes when we talk about mindful eating, the best thing to do to explain it is to think about the, you know, like the converse, which is mindless eating. So mm-hmm. when we eat mindlessly, we often don't consciously connect with our food, but make decisions based on like speed and convenience, or really just no thought that like whatever's there kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that often, and then when we actually eat mindlessly, actually in the moment, we're often eating fast, distractedly. We're not thinking about what we're doing. We're barely chewing our food. We eat fast. We eat while we're scrolling on Instagram or when we're binge watching Netflix. Like we just don't think about what's happening. And then afterwards, we're just like, you might notice, oh, I feel a bit bloated. Or you might kind of go around in life always just going like, God, I'm always so tired and bloated, and not really connect that back to, well, what have I eaten, or how have I eaten, or when did I eat, or like, you know, people snacking late at night and then finding they can't sleep and not really linking those two things together, for example. So that final piece is about connecting like how you feel and what's happening in your body to how you eat. What foods energize you, make you feel light, and what foods make you feel heavy and tired and that kind of thing.
And I mean, ultimately, if you're putting something into your system, it is going to affect you in some way, in some form,
yes, whether, it does.
You know, in whatever way it may be. But I think that was a great point, is to just be aware of what is happening to your body, and that can lead to better decisions. So this is a nice segue into the questions of, I personally find it extremely difficult to eat healthy. Like I walk by the pantry area and I see like a packet of chips and I'm not really hungry. But just for the sake of it, I'll just throw in a couple of chips into my mouth. You know, it's something as silly as that. Yes. But that the one aspect of it is taste that immediately gives me some excitement.
Exactly.
And the second aspect of it is even though I know it, I am very, at least trying to be more mindful in my daily life. But with food, I always struggle. And it's also difficult to adopt this kind of mindset, right? Especially with food.
It is.
We have Swiggy, we have like any possible thing is just easier. And I think that's key with anything. And I can link this to the fashion industry as well, where it's just easier to buy fast fashion. It's cheaper.
It's easier to buy.
It's just easy. And that's the thing. So what are some of the ways, you know, you think that this taste aspect of it is something to be aware of?
I think, honestly, firstly, thank you so much for sharing so openly. I think it's beautiful because it will speak to so many people listening. I can also totally 100% relate to you. We all can. So mindful eating isn't about self-judgment and creating new rules. But you're absolutely right that when it comes to just like being more mindful in today's world is more difficult because technology is literally designed to distract you in the moment away from being there, because it's people literally have designed these apps or games or whatever they are to keep pulling you in. So it's the same with today's food world around us, that like it is actually helpful to understand it from an evolutionary perspective, which is again part of mindfulness, because you're kind of connecting with your body. From an evolutionary perspective, it makes sense that when we find because we evolved at a time where food was scarce, the ability to find and eat food was literally what created the survival of our species. And if at that time you found something that was like fruit, you would gorge on it. Highly calorific foods. When we're coming from a point of, from a survival instinct from an evolutionary perspective, makes sense. So instead of judging ourselves for it, I just think it's helpful to understand that, because it's like, oh, okay. And especially for people, and I know about your history, but especially for anybody that's ever had a difficult history with food, like anybody that's ever been on a diet, even if it was just for a week, or tried to restrict themselves in some way, you create a scarcity mindset, and then you go into a bit of a, okay, there is food, and you feel very drawn to eat it because it gives you, because from a evolutionary perspective, that would make sense. If there was food scarcity, you would need to, when you saw food, eat that food, all of it, and try and stock up, which is kind of why our bodies are able to store fat. So yeah. I'm not saying that that's helpful now. I just think it's helpful to give us a perspective so that we don't think that we're crazy when we say to ourselves in the morning, I'm not going to eat loads of sugary food today. But then when we see it, we do it anyway. And then we judge ourselves for being weak and greedy when that's not the case. It's because those foods have been designed, literally designed to be as addictive as possible and like kind of hook into that thing of into that evolutionary tendency. So what I think can be helpful is to also notice what's happening in your body at the time that you walk past the pantry.
Right.
So just try and notice, in the same way, if you've ever practiced meditation, it's not about trying to change anything, it's about trying to notice it. So rather than having a dialogue in your mind, which is like judging yourself about whether you're going to eat it, getting into that, like, oh, you said you weren't going to do this. Just notice what's happening in your mind. So, okay, I feel drawn to eating the food. And just being able to notice that and acknowledging that a craving has arisen can sometimes help create a little bit of separation between you and the craving itself.
Right.
Another thing which then can be really, really helpful is to understand that cravings are kind of our evolutionary, there's an evolutionary thing, kind of reason why they come, but also it is often because we're trying to avoid a different emotion, which is more uncomfortable.
Ooh, so that's interesting.
If that's hunger, that's fine. Go ahead and eat it. I mean, try and make a healthy choice, but you should eat. But if it's boredom, if it's that actually you're feeling a bit stressed or anxious that day, that food, that flavor in your mouth that you were describing, that pop of excitement that comes, even though you know that it's not a long-term solution, like after 1 minute that flavor's gone and then you still feel the boredom or the stress or the anxiety or the hurt or the pain or whatever it is that you're feeling, and you have a new emotion which is, oh, I can't believe I did that, and then you feel annoyed with yourself. So what's incredibly helpful here is a lot of positive psychology research around cravings, which is cravings are, and this works even if you're trying to quit smoking, let alone trying to not eat when you're not hungry, which is, it's called riding the wave. So it's you conceptualize your craving as a wave, which will peak just like a wave, and then it will subside naturally if you don't follow it. So in the moment that you actually give in and eat the sweet or the chip or whatever it is, and I don't use the word give in a derogatory way, like it's not about judgment, because it feels in the moment so compelling, that feeling, that it's like it feels almost impossible to resist, I think. But what all neuroscience research shows is that craving, it peaks. So imagine that as the crest of the wave at its most powerful. just stay with it that bit longer. And this is where another nice rule comes in, which is like the, you can call it whatever, the 5 minute rule, the 10 minute rule. Just say, whatever you want to do, you can do it in 10 minutes. So mm-hmm. if it's the chips, I feel such a craving. I can have it in 10 minutes and allow that crest to come, and then notice how it, mm-hmm. the intensity gets
disappears.
Less and it actually disappears. So it's almost like that is you taking control of your evolutionary tendency.
And I think that's the same with meditation as well, right? As a technique. They say that you will 100% have thoughts come up during however long you're sitting, whether it's 10 minutes or 15 minutes. But if you just acknowledge the fact that that thought is there, don't kind of associate with that thought, but just let it pass.
Just let it be there. Exactly.
I mean, it's easier said than done, of course. But
It is so much easier said than done. Honestly, it's not easy. If it was easy, no one would have a problem. And actually, I mean, I don't like to use the word problem because that implies that people are doing something wrong. It's almost like a natural outcome of circumstance. The way that the food industry is designed is very similar to the fashion industry. The cheapest foods are the unhealthiest. The biggest companies unethical companies know exactly how to make you want to buy more food, want to eat more of their food, etc., etc. So rather than having a narrative of weakness or greed, just recognize, okay, this is the situation, accept it for what it is. Mm-hmm. And then when you do have an urge that isn't driven by hunger, and that's really crucial, and I do want to touch on hunger and fullness in this mm-hmm. conversation because it's central to mindful eating. But when you have a craving that isn't driven by hunger, and you know it's not really going to make you feel better in the long run, those are the cravings that we want to curb. And the best way, curb is maybe the wrong word, those are the cravings we want to ride. So we can't, trying to stop them and wish they weren't there isn't helpful. Just accept it's there. Almost as it comes into your mind, and someone's just asked, my work requires me to be up late at night, so mm-hmm. I end up eating a lot when I shouldn't. I think so many people can relate to that.
Yeah.
So my advice is don't try and right now think, okay, I'm going to just stop craving food late at night. That's not realistic. So when the craving inevitably comes, you then get upset with yourself that you started the day thinking, well, I'm not going to eat late at night. Mm-hmm. And then when people make that decision, at one point they feel like they won't have the craving late at night, and then when it comes they feel crazy, and then they feel weak when they give in to it. Actually, the craving is going to come whether you've made the decision to stop or not. So when it comes, you can just be like, hello old friend, the craving
doesn't eventually go away, this craving.
So just imagine, I'm sure everyone knows the behavioral model with humans, with dogs, you press a lever, the dog learns to associate the bell with the food or whatever it is.
Yeah.
These things become the more they happen, the more ingrained they become. So if you think about it, every time you get the craving and then you act on it, you're strengthening a neural pathway in your brain, which makes you feel like you, when the craving comes, you have to eat, and the craving mm-hmm. will keep coming.
Mm.
Even every time the craving comes and you ride it and don't eat, it gets less. And anybody who's ever given up smoking permanently knows, and that is me, and I do know what it used to feel like, to feel like that there is no way I can't have a cigarette at this point. I have such a strong craving.
Yeah.
Even though I said I was going to quit this morning, I have to smoke. Now I haven't had a craving for a cigarette in a really long time.
Yeah.
So it does go in exactly mm-hmm. the same way. It does go, but it does take a bit in between. And now I feel free. I feel free when I used to feel trapped in smoking. Mm. And you can feel exactly the same about cravings, say this late at night craving, Viba. Like, imagine it comes and you just say, hello, old friend, my cravings come. You just accept it. You don't have a harsh narrative about it. Say, cravings come and I'm ready. I'm fine.
Yeah.
And you just, and then you almost like give yourself a message like, you know, buckle in. Because you know it's going to get worse, as in the craving will get stronger and stronger. And just say, I'm just going to ride it out. 10-minute rule. I'm just going to ride it out. Let it. And then you'll find within 10 minutes, it will be less.
Yeah.
And that will result in you having successfully that time just a little bit nipped away at that neural pathway, which causes it to come in the first place. After you do that a few times, it will get easier to resist. After you do that a few more times, it will get easier to ride until it stops coming. And then you can feel free. And that's what we want. We want to feel free.
And I feel like personally, another issue that I have with, you know, actually adopting the mindful eating is in India, in our society, we live in joint families. We have, it's like, it's almost as if a culture when you have guests coming over is to just stuff them till they are sick. It's not even funny. I mean, it's done out of great intention.
I know.
Out of love or whatever it may be. But
I know
that attitude, and I think
that I find it hard as well.
Yeah, and that kind of relates to societal pressure as well, right? Like whatever it is with social media, and when we see somebody else doing something better than us, we want to do that. So there is that. It's kind of all intertwined in some way or the other. But I think with all of these aspects, it's just important to be aware first, as a first step. Yeah. It's just to be aware that this is what's happening.
Absolutely. It's to be aware. And honestly, in some situations, you will end up, you may be in a situation where you do choose to or feel that you have to overeat. And that's also not the end of the world.
Yeah.
It's when it, and because of the, you know, if it's the celebration, the food celebration. But when it's happening regularly, we do have to find ways to manage them. But when we are, when we're truly mindful and aware in the moment, it does become easier to manage, rather than kind of not having a plan, accidentally consuming way too much and then feeling completely like rubbish about yourself that you kind of gave in, rather than telling yourself like, okay, this is a situation where there'll be pressure to overeat. I'm going to think about ways. But one of the best ways I always give, you know, I give this kind of talk around the holidays, so just before Diwali and things, where people do feel this is coming up. And you know, one of the best ways is when people do that, it is like you said, it's wanting to give love and welcome and like look after their guests. So if you find ways, consciously plan ways to give that to the person, they actually do ease off a bit often when you really say, compliment them on the food, ask to have something extra before you're full, you know, compliment them on how well, how comfort, how at home they've made you feel, you know, because that's almost what it's about. Yeah. So you look at what's behind it. They're not literally trying to stuff you until you feel nauseous. They're trying to show you that they want to welcome you into your home and that nothing is too much trouble. So you can almost speak to that rather than just mindlessly eating everything that gets put on your plate.
I think that's a great tip. It's not easy for sure. But I think my biggest takeaway from this conversation, and I feel like we can go on and on about this, but my biggest takeaway from this is just to kind of notice what's happening. To my body as well as to my feelings when I'm kind of wanting to binge, because that's something that I do. Like, I just crave these things and I just binge.
I understand.
But just noticing it, I think, is a great tip for sure, is to kind of just be a little bit more aware. And I think automatically we will start to make better choices for ourselves. And that's, you know, across the board with anything, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. It's just kind of a lovely encompassing thing of mindful living in general. But yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Sarah.
Thank you so much for
inviting me on. I'll definitely be in touch with you and, you know, continue this extensive conversation that we can have.
Oh, I'd love to. Have a lovely evening.
You too. Bye.
Bye.